Hi, I'm Denise. I'm an alcoholic. So really, it is really different presenting rather than being here as a chairperson, you know. And it is very healthy to tell your story. And so if you get a chance, you know, sign up and see if you can do something like this when you're ready for it, you know. So more about alcoholism, you know. So we like the solution. When we went over that, I mean, we're finding out that God is our solution. And that God will resolve all our problems. Everything will go away, you know? It's just not about drinking. Our disease encompasses quite a bit of character defects and flaws and defects that we have that we carry around emotionally, physically, and We need to take a look at each and every one of them in order for us to start straightening our path out. But as we find out as we go along in the book, we find out that the wreckage of our past helps us to help other people, because we have the experience of, like, you know, a drowning person waiting for the life preserver to be thrown to them, and we know what that feels like, and we were drowning for a really long time. And when somebody comes in our life, we're able to help them because we have that experience in our back pocket. So more about alcoholism. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. You know, I didn't realize my dilemma was as bad as it was, but that's exactly what I was doing. I thought that I could beat alcohol. And, you know, I was on my way to the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently may be, has to be smashed. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. I mean, nobody wants to tell, like, to believe that we don't have power in our own life to control something that we're doing. And there's just no, nobody wants to believe that. And unfortunately for us alcoholics, it's so very true. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control. But such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. So that's pretty much a warning that's given in the book, you know, that you continue to drink and it will get worse. It won't get any better. And, you know, there were many times, you know, I'm experiencing with somebody in my life, you know, the consequences that came with my drinking. Not that this person is experiencing what my consequences were, but I'm starting to see the consequences in their life. And, you know, I sort of like almost pray for them so that, you know, they can hit home base so that the person can maybe help themselves a little bit, because the consequences seem to be what bring us into this room. We are like men who have lost their legs. They never grow new ones. Neither does there appear to be any kind of treatment which will make alcoholics of our kind like other men. We have tried every imaginable remedy. In some instances, there has been brief recovery, followed always by a still worse relapse. Physicians who are familiar with alcoholism agree there is no such thing as making a normal drinker out of an alcoholic. Science may one day accomplish this, but it hasn't done so yet. Despite all we can say, many who are real alcoholics are not going to believe they are in that class. By every form of self-deception and experimentation, they will try to prove themselves exception to the rule, therefore non-alcoholic. If anyone who is showing inability to control his drinking can do the right about face and drink like a gentleman, our hats are off to him. Heaven knows we have tried hard enough and long enough to drink like other people. Here are some of the methods. Drinking beer only. I mean, I did all of these. Drinking beer only, limiting the number of drinks. I put water in between each drink. Never drinking alone. Never drinking in the morning. Drinking only at home. Never having it in the house. Never drinking during business hours. Drinking only at parties. Switching from scotch to brandy, or, you know, it could be something else. You don't have to do scotch and brandy. It could be, you know, drinking only natural wines. Right. Agreeing to resign if ever drunk on the job. Taking a trip, not taking a trip. Swearing off forever, with or without a solemn oath. Oh, so many times. Taking more physical exercise. Reading inspirational books. Going to health farms and sanitariums, accepting voluntary commitments to commitment to asylums. I didn't do that one. We could increase the list ad infinitum. We do not like to pronounce any individual as alcoholic, but you can quickly diagnose yourself. Step over to the nearest bar room and try some controlled drinking. Try to stop. Drink and stop abruptly. Try it more than once. It will not take long for you to decide. If you are honest with yourself about it, it may be worth a bad case of jitters if you get a full knowledge of your condition. Well, you know, I tried this a lot, and I was never honest with myself, so therefore I was always battling, I'm not an alcoholic. Although deep inside, I did know. I mean, I did know. I just couldn't say the words and truly believe it, but I did know. And then finally it came where, you know, I was just waiting, you know, for liver disease, and then everything would be okay because then I would just die and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So waiting for death upon that apparent notification, you know, like I knew that I was going towards that end, and but it took me that long to really get honest and say, I really have a problem here. I'm deeper in than I thought. Though there is no way of proving it, we believe that early in our drinking careers, most of us could have stopped drinking, and I truly believe that too, because there was a time where it was like, if I stop this now, I could stop, but I didn't want to stop. So, but the difficulties is that few alcoholics had enough desire to stop while there is yet time. We have heard of a few instances where people who showed definite signs of alcoholism were able to stop for a long period because of an overpowering desire to do so. Here is one. A man of 30 was doing a great deal of spree drinking. He was very nervous in the morning after these bouts and quieted himself with more liquor. He was ambitious to succeed in business, but saw that he would get nowhere if he drank at all. Once he started, he had no control whatever. He made up his mind that until he had been successful in business and had retired, he would not touch another drop. An exceptional man, he remained bone dry for 25 years and retired at the age of 55 after a successful and happy business career. Then he fell victim to a belief which practically every alcoholic has, that his long period of sobriety and self-discipline had qualified him to drink as other men. Out came his carpet slippers and a bottle. In 2 months, he was in a hospital, puzzled and humiliated. He tried to regulate his drinking for a while, making several trips to the hospital meantime. Then, gathering all his forces, he attempted to stop altogether and found he could not. Every means of solving his problem, which money could buy, was at his disposal. Every attempt failed. Though a robust man at retirement, he went to pieces quickly and was dead within 4 years. You know, I mean, I just came crawling back in. You know, I was lucky, you know, because I stayed alive, but I would come crawling back on my knees when it really got bad. And then I would come back, you know, I would be around for a while. It wasn't like I, you know, played around. I really seriously tried it, But, you know, again, I'm just going to say that my thing was, and I truly believe that I didn't find the spiritual side of the program for a really long time. And that, and when I found that, then I was hooked, you know. This case contains a powerful lesson. Most of us have believed that if we remained sober for a long stretch, we could thereafter drink normally. But here is a man who at 55 years found he was just where he had left off at 30. We have seen the truth demonstrated again and again. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Commencing to drink after a period of sobriety, we are in a short time as bad as ever. If we are planning to stop drinking, there must be no reservation of any kind, nor any lurking notion that someday we will be immune to alcohol. And I know for myself, so say I picked up a drink, and everything was fine, everything went good. And so then I didn't drink for, you know, I was coming back, and I was experimenting. So I would have a drink, because I got the notion that I'm not an alcoholic again, I'm all cured, I'm all fine. And I would try a drink, and probably it would take like a week to a month to fully engage again, that I was right where I started from. Didn't take very long. It depended, you know, on the circumstances and the days and how much I was willing to really say, am I going to go in full force, or am I going to just, you know, try to control it to the best of my ability. But it was a short period of time, because I found out each and every time that I could not really control that. I would eventually be in full force. It would be just dependent of like anywhere from a week and then to a month. And I was right back to where I started from. Young people may be encouraged by this man's experience to think that they can stop as he did on their own willpower. We doubt if many of them can do it, because none will really want to stop, and hardly one of them, because of the peculiar mental twist already acquired, will find he can win out. Several of our crowd, men of 30 or less, had been drinking only a few years, but they found themselves as helpless as those who had been drinking 20 years. To be gravely affected, one does not necessarily have to drink a long time, nor take the quantities some of us have. This is particularly true of women. Potential female alcoholics often turn into the real thing and are gone beyond recall in a few years. Certain drinkers, who would be greatly insulted if called alcoholics, are astonished at their inability to stop. We who are familiar with the symptoms see large numbers of potential alcoholics among young people everywhere. But try and get them to see it. As we look back, we feel we had gone on drinking many years beyond the point where we could quit on our own willpower. That's a very true statement. If anyone questions whether he has entered this dangerous area, let him try leaving liquor alone for 1 year. It's like unbelievable. How can you do that? If he is a real alcoholic and very far advanced, there's a scant chance of success. I mean, a day for me was like a lot. In the early days of our drinking, we occasionally remained sober for a year or more, becoming serious drinkers again later. Though we may be able to stop for a considerable period, you may yet be a potential alcoholic. We think few to whom this book will appeal can stay dry anything like a year. Some will be drunk, yeah, the day after making their resolutions, most of them within a few weeks. For those who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. We are assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop. Whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose, whether he will drink or not. Many of us felt that we had plenty of character. There was a tremendous urge to cease forever, yet we found it impossible. This is the baffling feature of alcoholism, as we know it, this utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. I mean, I'm not going to say that I said to myself, okay, I'm going to stop drinking tomorrow, I'm going to stop drinking tomorrow. But I certainly many, many times said, I'm going to only have two drinks tonight. And then I had two fingers, you know, the next day. So, and I would go, what happened here? Like, how'd that happen? Like, where did all this go? And And I never understood it. I honestly didn't, because I didn't think that I was over drinking. And then, of course, I would pass out, you know, because that's what we do. We pass out. We don't just fall asleep. We pass out, and then we wake up, and then it's like, okay, we go up to bed. We take our little measure of whatever we need in order to get through the night. At least I did. And then the next day, my safety net was my bed. If I didn't have to get up, I wouldn't drink. Only what was right next to my bed. I would not get up from that bed. That was like my safety net. It was, you know, it was an amazing thing, but that like sort of saved me. I have to say, like, that saved me, and AA, because probably if you put it all the years together from me stopping, I had to have stopped at least by 4 years. So I took like 4 years off of my time of drinking because I tried to do AA. Not a lot, you know, but to me it seemed like a lot, you know. How then shall we help our readers determine to their own satisfaction whether they are... But that's how desperate I was. You know, this is what I'm trying to illustrate to everybody, is I was so desperate because I knew I had a problem, but I didn't want to go to AA, but I knew that AA was helping, but I didn't know how to talk to anybody, so I couldn't really explain or ask people, and when I had a sponsor. But I was like hurting so bad because I knew, but then what would life be without alcohol? Because I didn't know any better, and I didn't know how to go out socially without having a drink. I mean, it was very rare that I went out to have a drink. I mean, I was already carrying my drink, you know? That thing was in my pocketbook. It didn't really matter. Any weekend I would go away, I always had my stash that was small enough to put in pockets or whatever so that I had what I needed. The experiment of quitting for a period of time will be helpful, but we think we can render an even greater service to alcoholic sufferers and perhaps to the medical fraternity. So we shall describe some of the mental states that precede a relapse into drinking. For obviously, this is a crux of the problem. What sort of thinking dominates an alcoholic who repeats time after time the desperate experiment of the first drink? Friends who have reasoned with him after his spree, which has brought him to the point of divorce or bankruptcy, are mystified when he walks directly into a saloon. Why does he? Or what is he thinking? Our first example is a friend we shall call Jim. This man has a charming wife and family. He inherited a lucrative automobile agency. He had a commendable World War record. He is a good salesman. Everybody likes him. He is intelligent, normal so far as we can see, except for a nervous disposition. He did no drinking until he was 35. In a few years, he became so violent when intoxicated that he had to be committed. On leaving the asylum, he came into contact with us. We told him what we knew of alcoholism and the answer we had found. He made a beginning. His family was reassembled, and he began to work as a salesman for the business he had lost through drinking. All went well for a time, but he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. To his consternation, he found himself drunk half a dozen times in rapid succession. On each of these occasions, we worked with him, reviewing carefully what had happened. He agreed he was a real alcoholic in a serious condition. He knew he faced another trip to the asylum if he kept on. Moreover, he would lose his family, for whom he had a deep affection. Yet he got drunk again. We asked him to tell us exactly how it happened. This is his story. I came to work on Tuesday morning. I remember I felt ill. I think he had Mondays off. I remember I felt irritated that I had to be a salesman for a concern I once owned. I had a few words with the boss, but nothing serious. Then I decided to drive into the country and see one of my prospects for a car. On the way, I felt hungry, so I stopped at a roadside place where they have a bar. So convenient. I had no intention of drinking. I just thought I would get a sandwich. I also had the notion that I might find a customer for a car at this place. which was familiar, for I had been going to it for years. I had eaten there many times during the months I was sober. I sat down at the table and ordered a sandwich and a glass of milk. Still no thought of drinking. I ordered another sandwich and decided to have another glass of milk. And then that word, suddenly. The thought crossed my mind that if I were to put an ounce of whiskey in my milk, it wouldn't hurt me on a full stomach. I ordered a whiskey and poured it into the milk. I vaguely sensed I was not being any too smart, but felt reassured as I was taking the whiskey on a full stomach. The experiment went so well that I ordered another whiskey and poured it into more milk. That didn't seem to bother me, so I tried another. Well, I think mine was Crown Regal in orange juice. I thought that was like a great concoction for the morning. Thus started one more journey to the asylum for Jim. Here was the threat of commitment, the loss of family and position, to say nothing of that intense mental and physical suffering which drinking always caused him. Yeah, I do want to comment on that because, you know, finally when the alcohol caught up to me, you know, now it was a time that people were noticing. Now it was a time where I was being sort of pointed at or questioned. And now was a time where there was decision making. And they were very uncomfortable times because now I had to say, yes, I can go for treatment and admit that I had a problem. Or I could say, no, I think you're crazy and I don't have a problem. So, and then I remember one time where I admitted it to my employer that I had a drink the night before. And then she says, now I have to tell human resources. I said, but you promised. So, you know, I don't know if it was humiliation or clearly to admit that there was something going on that wasn't correct and that somebody else pointed out about me that I had to either run away from or I had to admit and try to take care of once again. Nothing had worked. And I blamed, like, AA doesn't work, this doesn't work, rehabs don't work, this, you know. So you always face that. I don't know if it's called humiliation. I don't really know. But, you know, it was turmoil, you know, for me to say, I'm caught. Now I'm caught. Thus started one more journey to the asylum. Here was a threat, the loss of family and position, to say nothing of the intense mental and physical suffering which drinking always caused. He had much knowledge about himself as an alcoholic, yet all reasons for not drinking were easily pushed aside in favor of the foolish idea that he could take whiskey. If only he admitted he mixed milk. We will believe what we will believe. Whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. How can such a lack of proportion of the ability to think straight be called anything else? Doing the same thing over and over again and looking for different results. You know, who said that? Albert Einstein? You may think this is an extreme case. To us, it is not far-fetched, for this kind of thinking has been characteristic of every single one of us. We have sometimes reflected more than Jim did upon the consequences. But there was always the curious mental phenomenon that parallel with our sound reasoning where inevitably ran some insanely trivial excuse for taking the first drink. Our sound reasoning failed to hold us in check. The insane idea won out. Next day, we'd ask ourselves in all earnestness and sincerity, how could have it happened? That's called parallel thinking. I don't understand. But I do remember, you know, a couple of times where, you know, I had earned some time in AA, and then all of a sudden, you know, I had made that insane choice to take a drink. And then the next day, realizing I now have to start from day one again. And I think there were times where I didn't even know how to handle that. If I, you know, I've already failed, so I kept on with the failure and talked myself into that it was just a matter of time. You know, all of these things would just make sense and justify in my mind why I would continue just to drink instead of asking somebody for help again in AA. So those are the insane, for me, those are the insane ideas that I had that, you know, kept me out there for a much longer time than I probably should have been out there. In some circumstances, we have gone out deliberately to get drunk, feeling ourselves justified by nervousness, anger, worry, depression, jealousy, or the like. But even in this type of beginning, we were obliged to admit that our justification for a spree was insanely insufficient in the light of what always happened. We now see that when we began to drink deliberately instead of casually, there was a little serious or affective thought during the period of premeditation of what the terrific consequences may be. Our behavior is as absurd and incomprehensible with respect to the first drink as that of an individual with a passion, say for jaywalking. He gets a thrill out of skipping in front of fast-moving vehicles. He enjoys himself for a few years in spite of friendly warnings. Up to this point, you would label him as a foolish chap having queer ideas of fun. Luck then deserts him, and he is slightly injured several times in succession. You would expect him, if he were normal, to cut it out. Presently, he is hit again, and this time has a fractured skull. Within a week after leaving the hospital, a fast-moving trolley car breaks his arm. He tells you he has decided to stop jaywalking for good, but in a few weeks, he breaks both legs. Okay, so on through the years, this conduct continues, accompanied by his continual promises to be careful or to keep off the streets altogether. Finally, he can no longer work, his wife gets divorced, and he is held up to ridicule. He tries every known means to get the jaywalking idea out of his head. He shuts himself up in an asylum, hoping to mend his ways. But the day he comes out, he races in front of a fire engine, which breaks his back. Such a man would be crazy, wouldn't he? You may think our illustration is too ridiculous, but is it? We who have been through the ringer have to admit if we substituted alcoholism for jaywalking, the illustration would fit us exactly. However intelligent we may have been in other respects, where alcohol has been involved, we have been truly insane. It's strong language, but isn't it true? Some of you are thinking, yes, what you tell us is true, but it doesn't fully apply. We admit we have some of these symptoms, but we have not gone to the extremes you fellows did, nor are we likely to. For we understand ourselves so well after what you have told us that such things cannot happen again. We have not lost everything in life through drinking, and we certainly do not intend to. Thanks for the information. So that may be true of certain non-alcoholic people who, though drinking foolishly and heavily at present time, are able to stop or moderate because their brains and bodies have not been damaged as ours were. But the actual or potential alcoholic, with hardly an exception, will be absolutely unable to stop drinking on the basis of self-knowledge. Now, when they say that our brains and bodies have not been damaged as ours were, I don't think that they mean from excessive drinking so much as actually how we enter this world, as I believe I was an alcoholic way before I started drinking. So this is a point we wish to emphasize and reemphasize to smash home upon our alcoholic readers, as it has been revealed to us out of bitter experience. Let's take another illustration. Fred is a partner in a well-known accounting firm. His income is good, he has a fine home, is happily married, and the father of promising children of college age. He has so attractive a personality that he makes friends with everyone. If ever there was a successful businessman, it is Fred. To all appearance, he is a stable, well-balanced individual, yet he is alcoholic. We first saw Fred about a year ago in a hospital where he had gone to recover from a bad case of the jitters. It was his first experience of this kind, and he was much ashamed of it. Far from admitting he was an alcoholic, he told himself he came to the hospital to rest his nerves. The doctor intimated strongly that he might be worse than he realized. For a few days, he was depressed about his condition. He made up his mind to quit drinking altogether. It never occurred to him that perhaps he could not do so in spite of his character and standing. Fred would not believe himself an alcoholic, much less accept a spiritual remedy for his problems. We told him what we knew about alcoholism. He was interested and conceded that he had some of the symptoms, but he was a long way from admitting that he could not do anything about it himself. He was positive that this humiliating experience, plus the knowledge he acquired, would keep him sober the rest of his life. Self-knowledge would fix it. So, you know, when we come into this room, you know, we're told to identify, not compare, because, you know, that allows us to separate ourselves from looking at other people and comparing what they're doing to ourselves, and comparing how bad they are to what we are, and comparing what their problem is to what our problem is, that we can at least open up or unblock our minds to, like, hear what somebody's saying about the circumstance or situation or drinking event that they had, in order for them to hear or see what they may own also. So it's very, very, very important. We heard no more of Fred for a while. One day we were told that he was back in the hospital. This time he was quite shaky. He soon indicated he was anxious to see us. The story he told us is most instructive, for here was a chap absolutely convinced he had to stop drinking, who had no excuse for drinking, who exhibited splendid judgment and determination in all his other concerns, yet was flat on his back nevertheless. Let him tell you about it. I was much impressed with what you fellows said about alcoholism, and I frankly did not believe it would be possible for me to drink again. I rather appreciated your ideas about the subtle insanity which precedes the first drink, but I was confident it could not happen to me after what I had learned. I reasoned I was not so far advanced as most of you fellows, that I had been usually successful in licking my other personal problems, and that I would therefore be successful where you men failed. I felt I had every right to be self-confident that it would be only a matter of exercising my willpower and keeping on guard. In this frame of mind, I went about my business, and for a time all was well. I had no trouble refusing drinks and began to wonder if I had not been making too hard work of a simple matter. One day I went to Washington to present some accounting evidence to a government bureau. I had been out of town before during this particular dry spell, so there was nothing new about that. Physically, I felt fine. Neither did I have any pressing problems or worries. My business came off well. I was pleased and knew my partners would be too. It was the end of a perfect day, not a cloud on the horizon. So this guy was doing really well, you know? I went to my hotel and leisurely dressed for dinner. As I crossed the threshold of the dining room, the thought came to mind that it would be nice to have a couple of cocktails with dinner. That was all, nothing more. I ordered a cocktail and my meal. Then I ordered another cocktail. After dinner, I decided to take a walk. When I returned to the hotel, it struck me that a highball would be fine before going to bed. So I stepped into the bar and had one. I remember having several more that night and plenty next morning. I have a shadowy recollection of being in an airplane bound for New York and of finding a friendly taxicab driver at the landing field instead of my wife. The driver escorted me about for several days. I know little of where I went or what I said and did. Then came the hospital with unbearable mental and physical suffering. So he was more than likely in a blackout. You know, that I never did take, like, big excursions like that. Mine were like much more closer to home, you know. But a lot of blackouts. As soon as I regained my ability to think, I went carefully over the evening in Washington. Not only had I been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. This time I had not thought of the consequences at all. I had commenced to drink as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. I now remembered what my alcoholic friends had told me, how they prophesized that if I had an alcoholic mind, the time and place would come, I would drink again. They had said that though I did raise a defense, it would one day give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. Well, just that did happen and more, for what I learned about alcoholism did not occur to me at all. I knew from the moment that I had an alcoholic mind, I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. I had never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow. So he was in a very hopeless state at that point because he realized, you know, he really had a problem. And no willpower was going to help him. And self-knowledge, it was now, he had to find something that was greater than that. Two of the members of Alcoholics Anonymous came to see me. They grinned, which I didn't like so much. And then he asked me, that was one thing when I walked into these rooms, I always hated the people. They were always smiling, you know? What are they smiling about? You know? They grinned, which I didn't like so much, and then asked me if I thought myself alcoholic and if I were really licked this time. I mean, you got to really, like, really believe this, and you got to really know that you are. I had to concede both propositions. They piled on me heaps of evidence to the effect that an alcoholic mentality such as I exhibited in Washington was a hopeless condition. They cited cases out of their own experience by the dozen. This process snuffed out the last flicker of conviction that I could do the job myself. Then they outlined the spiritual answer and program of action, which 100 of them had followed successfully. Though I had been only a nominal churchman, their proposals were not intellectually hard to swallow, but the program of action, though entirely sensible, was pretty drastic. It meant, I remember picking out just what I was going to do, you know, like I didn't know that you had to do all the steps, but then I knew that you had to do all the steps, but then I didn't understand what powerlessness meant. I had no idea what that, and then we saw that, you know, we saw all the films and all that kind of stuff, and it was like, I don't know, Dr. Martin, what is he talking about, you know? It meant I would have to throw several lifelong conceptions out of the window. That was not easy. But the moment I made up my mind to go through this process, I had the curious feeling that my alcoholic condition was relieved, as in fact it proved to be. Quite as important was the discovery that spiritual principles would solve all my problems. I have since been brought into a way of living infinitely more satisfying and, I hope, more useful than the life I lived before. My old manner of living was by no means a bad one, but I had no exchange. I would not exchange its best moments for the worst I have now. I would not go back to it, even if I could. Fred's story speaks for itself. We hope it strikes home for 2000s like him. We had felt only the first nip of the ringer. Most alcoholics have to be pretty badly mangled before they really commence to solve the problem. Wow, this is a very long chapter, isn't it? Oh, no. We're good. No, because I didn't look. Many doctors and psychiatrists agree with our conclusions. One of these men, staff member of a world-renowned hospital, I think that's the Townsend Hospital, recently made this statement to some of us. What you say about the general hopelessness of the average alcoholic's plight is, in my opinion, correct. As to two of you men whose stories I have heard, there is no doubt in my mind that you were 100% hopeless, apart from divine help. Had you offered yourself as patients at this hospital, I would not have taken you. If I had been able to avoid it, people like you are too heartbreaking. Though not a religious person, I have found profound respect for the spiritual approach in such cases as yours. For most cases, there is virtually no other solution. Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. We have to call on, and I just want to say that, we have to call on God. There's no defense against the first drink. Problems cannot be solved by the mind that created them. So, you know, for me, I love this book because I always read something different. And as I was reading this, I mean, so many things flood through my mind of different thoughts and experiences that drinking came into being or caused, you know, some episodes that could be a part of a drunk log or whatever, that you would think that, you know, because of them that you would stop and that would have been enough for you, you know, broken leg, car accident, you know, almost getting hit by a train. I mean, you would think, but you escape them. Our brain somehow forgets them, even though it's back there, and we pick up another drink. And then it happens again, and we do something silly, we get remorseful. This like these are these patterns that we went through, like on a daily basis. Like, and even though we knew them well and we knew what was going to happen, for some odd reason, we would pick up a drink again. I would change the concoction. I would change it to something less. I had full body chronic, like, body hives. And, I mean, it stopped me from doing things, going places, going to work. I would have to leave work. It was very uncomfortable. But yet, you would think I would stop drinking. No, I would just lessen the drinking, or I would make sure that I upped it just enough and then brought it down, the tears, in order for me to continue at a level. It was the same thing when I was sick. I mean, I was vomiting, and in between the vomit, I would drink. And it was like sick. This is just sick mental thinking. There was a period of time I used Listerine. I mean, it was horrible. I mean, my stomach was in arrears, you know? It was just horrible. But to me, and I looked at it, it said, what was it, 40 proof, so it's 80% alcohol? Or it's 80%, it's 80 proof, so it's 40%. It was one of those. I'm like, it's like a lot of freaking alcohol in here, you know?
You're talking about Listerine?
Yeah, Listerine. Right. So I went through that phase, you know. I mean, and nothing until, so that would be in between the drinking, because I was not drinking. I was not drinking. Unless it was, had a name on there. Some alcoholic beverage. That was not alcohol. That was Listerine. It was not alcohol. I don't know. I think back at these things, and I, you know, I read this chapter, and I continue to always, like, take a look at myself. And then, you know, when I'm helping other people, or I have friends and things like that, and then I remember having this useful information, like, drink water in between each drink. Then you won't get so drunk. And then you can drink all night, you know? And I just heard this person that is in my life give that advice to someone. And I'm like, oh my, you know, what does this remind me of? This reminds me of my progression that I didn't even know was a part of the progression. But it's all a part of the progression. But see, if I knew all of that in hindsight, that I was that sick then, as an alcoholic with an alcoholic mind and an alcoholic thinking, would I have been able to stop? Because I was a potential alcoholic. That's what it tells me in this. I had every, like, sign that said, you may go collect $100 and pass go. And I didn't listen to any of them, even though I would get sick, even though I would throw up, even though I had a car accident, even though I would get a broken bone, I would slip and fall, I would have all these consequences. I would lose a job, I would have to go to the doctor, I would lie to the doctor, I wouldn't tell them that I would get... I had to switch my urine. I mean, come on, for a job, you know? I had to tell this girl and say, can I use your urine for a job? I mean, I trusted her. I couldn't even trust myself, you know? So it's all these things that, you know, they really are there. The writing is on the wall. But as an alcoholic, I really didn't want to look at them. I really didn't want to see them. I really didn't. You know, I was like an ostrich with my head in the sand and just wanted to continue on my merry way because I thought alcohol worked. I thought alcohol was my answer. I thought that was what was, you know, that was the way that I was going to get through life. I didn't realize how detrimental it was until it was too late. And then I was just waiting. I was at the jumping off point where I just was waiting to die. So I'm going to stop there and open up the meeting for any questions.